And now Peter is going to read to us from chapter 3 of the letter to the Colossians.
It's Colossians 3, verses 1 to 11. So if you have been raised with Christ, seek the things that are above, where Christ is, seated at the right hand of God. Set your minds on things that are above, not on things that are on the earth. For you have died, and your life is hidden with Christ in God. When Christ, who is your life, is revealed, then you also will be revealed with him in glory. Put to death, therefore, whatever in you is earthly: fornication, impurity, passion, evil desire, and greed, which is idolatry. On account of these, the wrath of God is coming on those who are disobedient. These are the ways you also once followed when you were living in that life. But now you must get rid of all such things: anger, wrath, malice, slander, and abusive language from your mouth. Do not lie to one another, seeing that you have stripped off the old self with its practices and have clothed yourselves with the new self, which is being renewed in knowledge according to the image of its creator. In that renewal, there is no longer Greek and Jew, circumcised and uncircumcised, barbarian, Scythian, slave and free, but Christ is all and in all.
Thank you. Those two coins, by the way, how much did they come to? Tuppence. Absolute music to my ears. Not two pence. What you've got in your hand there is tuppence. Lovely. Bear that in mind. I'm going through a period in which my mind seems obsessed with trying to ferret out what it must have been like to be one or in one of those early Christian congregations like the one at Colossae. My interest, of course, isn't purely historical. What I'm really ferreting away at is, if that is what it was like for them there 2,000 years ago, what could it be like, what should it be like for me and for us here now? I suppose I'm sometimes worried that what I've got isn't really Christianity at all, but it's just something of my own invention, something I like. And so I want to be reassured that my Christian journey is the real thing, that what's happening to me in the 21st century is a genuine 21st century version of what happened then. Today, Peter has read from the letter to the Colossians. What do we know about Colossae in St. Paul's time? Not a lot. It wasn't one of the more successful of the Roman towns in Asia Minor, and by the time Paul's disciple Epaphras got there, equipped with the Christian gospel and with Paul's technique of evangelism, Colossae was in decline. But one thing that we do know about it, strangely, is that it was renowned for its plethora of temples and cults. Of course, there were all round the Greek and Roman world cults for everything and gods for everything. Life was shaped by the need to serve the gods. But in Colossae, they have more than their fair share of temples and shrines and gods. Central to each family was its own family god. In the courtyard of the house, in the front garden, if you like, there would be a shrine, the family shrine, and in the shrine there would be a holy fire, which was never allowed to go out. To let the holy fire go out would be a total disaster. And in what we might call the olden days, long before St. Paul and Christian times, the head of the household, invariably a man, he would have been quite literally the family high priest. And it was his task to mediate at the altar between the family in which he was the head and the spirits of the ancestors who dwelt in the shrine. And the rest of the family, they derived their belonging to the family, the thing that made them belong to the family, both in this world and in the next world, was the prayers that the head of the family offered at the altar. And a woman, a girl, when she married, she left the fire and the god of her father's family to be formally adopted by the god of her new husband's family. And their children would automatically become part of the family. But the slaves, the people who did the real work in the household, they were not part of the family. There was no immortal life for them. And by St. Paul's time, the general dynamic of this scheme of things was still very much in force. And as well as the household gods, there were gods and there were shrines specific to every trade and industry that was practiced in the city. There were gods and there were shrines for the wells and the water supplies. And there was a god and a shrine for the city itself, for Colossae. And on top of all these things, by St. Paul's time, there were the gods of the Roman Empire, including the emperor himself. And all these shrines, they stood in a sort of hierarchy. The emperor came first, then the empire, then the city, then the trades and the guilds, and then the family. And everybody knew their place. Everybody knew their obligation to each shrine, and they knew where they stood in this hierarchy. And doing your duty to these shrines was burdensome. Tertullian, the Christian apologist, some 100 years after Paul, he wrote mockingly about these cults. He said, "I'm fully convinced that the solemn ceremonies and secret rites of idolatry build up credence and prestige for themselves by means of their pretentious magnificence and by the fees that are charged." So, the cults were not only time-consuming, they were expensive. It's funny how we sometimes think something must be better. Why do we think something must be better just because it's more expensive? I mean, think cosmetics. Think Easter eggs with their packaging. Think cars. If it's more expensive, it's better. Same with the religious cults of Colossae. Today, of course, we see things very differently to the way they saw things. For example, we take for granted that there's a division in our lives between our public lives and our personal lives. They didn't see it that way. The division in St. Paul's day wasn't between public and private. The division was between public and domestic. The men took their place in the public life. They looked after the shrines. Everybody else took their place in domestic life. It was the life of the city, and it was the life of the family that counted. And the idea that you, as an individual, had a life of your own, and that your life counted, that was unknown. Without your city and without your family, you were absolutely nothing. And nothing, no one could be more nothing, I'm so sorry to say, than a childless widow. No husband, no family, no children. Absolutely nothing. And so St. Paul and his friends, they rocked up at these cult-filled Asian towns saying, you really, really don't need all this stuff. Don't you find it does your head in? Don't you find it's bleeding you dry? You don't need it. You really, really don't. All you need, they said, is to be adopted into the family of God through Jesus the Christ. And here's the thing they said, God cares about you. Whoever you are, God cares about you. Even though you are a slave, even though you are a widow, God knows and God cares about you. It must have sounded so bizarre and so unlikely. But people turned up. Some of them are named and described in the book of Acts and the epistles. Men and women turned up. Jews and non-Jews turned up. Rich and poor turned up. Businessmen and businesswomen turned up. Free people, including high-ranking Roman officials, turned up. And slaves turned up. People of all races and tongues. Not in huge numbers at first, but they came. And in their Christian fellowship, as the adopted children of God, they learned a totally new way of relating to each other, a new way of dealing with each other, a new way of thinking about each other, ways of generosity, equality, mutual respect, all of it rooted in the transforming love that overwhelmed them. In Colossae, it was Epaphras who taught them about the life and death of Jesus of Nazareth, and how through him the spirit of the love of God could transform each one of them. But it happened in the fellowship. That was the thing. It happened in the fellowship. Notoriously, the philosopher Aristotle had described a slave as a living tool, not really a person at all. A slave was merely a useful possession, like a chair. You could have a favourite slave, of course you could, but then you can have a favourite chair, can't you? I struggle to imagine how it must have been for a slave-owning man or a slave-owning woman to come to one of those fellowships with their household, including their slaves, and once through the door, they'd have found themselves on equal terms with their slave, eating the same food, eating at the same table. They would have served each other hand to hand as equals, equally precious to God and equally precious to each other. And if it seemed odd to the slave owner, what must it have been like for the slave? Remember what we heard a few minutes ago? Peter read it. You must get rid of anger, wrath, malice, slander, abusive language. Do not lie to one another, seeing that you have been stripped of the old self with its practices, and you have clothed yourself with the new self, which is being renewed in the knowledge according to the image of its creator. In that renewal, there is no longer Greek and Jew, circumcised and uncircumcised, barbarian, Scythian, slave and free, but Christ is all in all. They learnt this and they practiced it in the fellowship. But was it just for the fellowship? I mean, when the fellowship was over and they went home, did they go home for things to be the same as before? No, they didn't. The new ways which they learnt in the fellowship were to apply just as much when they went back into their public world and when they went back into the privacy of the household. And I find myself wondering, which was the more testing? Taking their new faith and their way of life into the wider world, or taking it home? Do you remember Paul's letter to Philemon? A tiny little letter crammed into our Bible just before the letter to the Hebrews. Paul is in prison, and Onesimus, the runaway slave, has come to him. And Paul sends Onesimus, who is useless in name and useless in nature, back to his owner, Philemon. He tells Philemon that the boy slave is to be a slave no longer, but more than a slave, a beloved brother. I don't think Paul is asking Philemon to give the boy his freedom in a legal sense. I think Paul is demanding that Philemon transfers what he's learnt in his Christian fellowship to his life at home. In the fellowship, his slave, Onesimus, is his beloved brother. So, when they get home, that slave must still be his beloved brother. How on earth did they work that out together? I've no idea. No wonder they struggled. It seems to me that when we go out through those doors after our worship is over, we have to do exactly the same thing as they did in Colossae. We take our Christian life into the wider world, and we take our Christian life into our domestic world. And by our domestic world, I don't mean just what happens in our house here in Sawston or whichever nearby village we live in. By our domestic life, I mean all the complex, and in this congregation, very often international, personal networks of family, and perhaps we should add friendship, of which we are a part. Sometimes I think it's easier to live out the Christian life in the world than it is in our domestic life. For as Philemon discovered, it can really search us out. An old friend of mine, Methodist minister, then in his 90s and now long dead, once said to me that if Christianity doesn't make you easier to live with. It isn't worth tuppence. Two of those things down there. It isn't worth tuppence. So I ask myself, am I easier to live with now than I was 40 years ago? I rather fear that the one person who can answer that question might tell me something I don't want to hear, so we won't ask. You must rid yourself, of anger and wrath and malice and slander and abusive language. Do not lie to one another, seeing you have stripped off the old self with its practices and have clothed yourself with the new self, which is being renewed, I want to put in brackets there, daily, in knowledge according to the image of its creator. And that is where the lectionary reading for today stops. Had we read on to the next few verses, we would have heard what Matthew is going to read to us now.
This is Colossians chapter 3, verses 12 to 17. As God's chosen ones, holy and beloved, clothe yourselves with compassion, kindness, humility, meekness and patience. Bear with one another, and if anyone has a complaint against another, forgive each other, just as the Lord has forgiven you. So you must forgive. Above all, clothe yourselves with love, which binds everything together in perfect harmony. And let the peace of Christ rule your hearts, to which indeed you were called in the one body, and be thankful. Let the word of Christ dwell in you richly. Teach and admonish one another in all wisdom, and with gratitude in your hearts sing psalms, hymns, and spiritual songs to God. And whatever you do, in word or deed, do everything in the name of the Lord Jesus, giving thanks to God the Father through him.
And that's how it must be when we go through those doors, out into the world and out into our domestic life. That's how it had to be in Colossae. That's how it has to be here. Whatever you do, in word or deed, do everything in the name of the Lord Jesus, giving thanks to God the Father through him.